Ms. Austin, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Really make it for noon. Say good morning. My name is Amy Austin, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Antonio Acosta Flores. Mr. Acosta Flores was charged in the court below with the felony offense of illegal reentry. A valid prior deportation is an element of an illegal reentry offense, and a successful collateral attack on the initial deportation proceeding requires dismissal of an illegal reentry indictment. In this case, the district court incorrectly held that Mr. Acosta Flores did not meet all the requirements to collaterally attack the 1996 order of deportation. The failure of the INS Immigration Service in this case to provide notice to a Mr. Acosta Flores of his deportation hearing kept him from attending that deportation hearing in the first instance, and therefore he was never apprised of his right to seek administrative relief or judicial review. Under El Shami, this court's decision, Antonio Acosta Flores has met the first requirement and has shown that he can collaterally attack his underlying deportation. The second requirement is that the deportation proceeding at which the order was issued improperly deprived him of the opportunity for judicial review. Again, Mr. Acosta Flores did not receive notice of the original deportation hearing, therefore he was not present, and of course he could not avail himself of any opportunity for judicial review. He wasn't given notice that he had the opportunity for judicial review because he wasn't present at the hearing.
But didn't they mail a notice to the address that had been provided?
They sent, through certified mail, notice of the hearing date to the address where the district court found Mr. Acosta Flores lived. But the statute at the time, 1996, required that notice be given in person. And if it's not practical to give the notice in person, then it could be sent through certified mail. So first of all, they violated the statute at the time and they did not serve the notice in person. And it was completely practical in this case to do because Mr. Acosta Flores lived in the same vicinity as the immigration judge and the court that had the hearing. They had given Mr. Acosta Flores and his brother had given immigration officials where he was living, the fact that he was working, the fact that he was a juvenile at the time. He was 15 years old, and he was in the custody of his adult brother. Therefore, immigration, not only was it practical, it was the smart thing to do, and the fact that Mr. Acosta Flores was a Spanish-speaking juvenile. They did not attempt in-person service. Rather, they sent it through certified mail. So they violated the statute by not doing it in person. Second, certified mail is presumptively valid notice unless there's evidence that it was not received. And in this case, the record is clear. And the district court made the finding that Mr. Acosta Flores did not receive the notice. The card that is left on a door when certified mail is sent was left, I believe the record shows, twice, indicating that there is a piece of certified mail to be picked up. The certified mail was...
Has your client ever attempted to reopen those proceedings?
He was never given an opportunity.
No, I mean, since he's been arrested for this, I mean, isn't there a provision that when he's been adjudicated or the deportation issue has been adjudicated, but it's done in absentia, that he can then later file to reopen that even beyond the 90 days? Is there any statutory prohibition existing right now that would prohibit him from seeking to exhaust his administrative remedy?
Your Honor, I think he could probably go into immigration court now and try to contest that underlying deportation.
Right.
But as it stands now, he has an illegal reentry felony conviction due to the case that we're, you know, on appeal here today.
But before this case went to court,
what
would have prohibited him from reopening that issue?
He was never apprised of his right to judicial review of that 1996 order for all those reasons that I've stated. First of all, he wasn't there. Second of all, he wasn't told about his right to administrative relief or judicial review. And he wasn't told that before I order you deported as a 14-year-old.
Where's the requirement he be told?
Mendoza.
Be told these things.
That he has a right to what the law is. I'm sorry.
Where's the requirement that he be told that he can go and file to reopen this adjudication?
Well, to reopen it, Your Honor, that's separate than a judicial review of the deportation order.
If the adjudication was made and he alleges there was no notice and that it was done in absentia, he can reopen. He can go back and seek to reopen it on that basis. And that's what apparently he's alleging here, but he's not attempted to go back and reopen that issue and exhaust his administrative remedies. So I don't know how you even get past the first hurdle.
Well, Your Honor, under El Shami, you certainly get past the first hurdle when there is no notice given, when the government is seeking to use an order of deportation as an element in a felony prosecution. That order of deportation can be collaterally attacked. And they don't say that you have to go, there is no requirement that he has to reopen it administratively.
But he has to exhaust his administrative remedies.
But under El Shami, if you're not present for the hearing, you're not told of the order, you, by logic, can't exhaust any remedies because you don't even know what happened.
Not then, but if you find out later on, you can go back and reopen and exhaust your remedies.
Well, the first time he found out what happened to him was when he was indicted for illegal reentry.
Okay, and then he can go back and seek to reopen.
But what we're here on today is that he should not have been found guilty of the felony crime of illegal reentry based on this prior deportation.
We're going in circles. Yes. Go ahead and continue with your argument.
I don't believe there is a case out there that requires him to go and reopen that deportation proceeding from 1996 to argue in a criminal case that order cannot be used. If the underlying proceeding did not provide any meaningful opportunity to be heard or meaningful opportunity for review, then it cannot be used as an element for the criminal prosecution of illegal reentry. And the district court erred when it found, first, that he had adequate notice of the hearing. The district court found Mr. Acosta Flores never got the certified mail. So first, the statute wasn't followed. Service wasn't attempted in person. Second, he never received the mail. The district court then accredited Mr. Acosta Flores' testimony that he never received anything telling him about a hearing in 1996. And the evidence in the joint appendix at page 123 says the certified mail, the notice, was never claimed. So it was not received.
Let me understand the import, at least the reopening. If he was to seek to reopen, what would be his argument that, well, I didn't get notice? And then I assume then the government would then just give him notice. He could actually probably go from there, but then you wouldn't be able to get the subsequent things to go with it.
Well, I'm sorry.
And I guess from your perspective, the collateral attack aspect, it allows you to collateral attack if notice is not provided for meaningful review. In this instance, your contention rests upon the determination that certified mail is not sufficient notice under the statute that existed at that time.
That's correct, Your Honor. The law required in-person service, and if it wasn't practical, then certified mail. But the certified mail is only presumptively valid. And in most of the cases, there's the evidence that certified mail was sent to the alien's attorney.
Was this the address he gave to him?
Excuse me?
It was sent to the address that he gave to the authorities.
Well, the card indicating a letter was available at the post office. The card was attached. There's no evidence where it was left, but they say it was left at the address that Mr. Acosta Flores gave immigration. Yes.
Properly addressed.
Yes.
With the address that he had given him. And if he had a different address, he was supposed to update him on the addresses, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. There is no indication that he had moved. From all indications and the testimony, he was still there at that address. But we have a Spanish-speaking juvenile who worked during the day, and the card that was left on the door was completely in English, and everything about any notification that there was a certified mail letter waiting on him at the post office was in English. There was no Spanish on it.
And the government says none of this makes any difference anyway because he came back in illegally in 2002 and got caught and shipped back.
That's correct. And several reasons.
That's an alternative basis for their position.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I will address that. All the subsequent orders of removal or deportation proceedings also are insufficient to form the basis of the prosecution for illegal reentry. They were either reinstatements of that 1996 order that we submit was unfair and subject to collateral attack, or if they weren't reinstatements of that order, they were administrative proceedings that by statute did not provide any administrative relief or judicial review. And Mendoza-Lopez states that, I'll read you the quote, where a determination made in an administrative proceeding is to play a critical role in a subsequent prosecution and imposition of a criminal sanction, there must be some meaningful review of the administrative proceeding. And under 8 U.S.C. 1231, A5 that deals with reinstatement of removal orders against aliens. Prior orders of removal are reinstated from original dates and are not subject to being reopened or reviewed. So any reinstatement is not a valid order upon which to base the criminal prosecution because there's absolutely no opportunity for any reopening it or judicial review. If in the other cases, they were simply expedited removals under 8 U.S.C. Section 1225, where at the border, someone attempts to cross, they take custody of them, they determine they don't have the papers, and they bump them right back over the border. Those are called expedited removal procedures.
Is that what the 2002 thing was? What was that? What's wrong with that?
Well, there is more than one 2002, Your Honor.
There's two of them.
Yes.
But the government rely on both of them or just one?
Well, I'll tell you that the February 13, 2002 is an administrative determination by an immigration inspector, not an immigration judge, and there is no opportunity for review of that order. And so it's at JA 129, and this is the one I think that the government wants to rely on because from the first page of it, JA 129, it appears that it's not a reinstatement of an original order because it's not entitled reinstatement. It's notice and order of expedited removal. So on the front first page, it appears it's an administrative proceeding. But I would submit that the sections that 8 U.S.C. Section 1225B1, which I cited earlier, which is in the paragraph there on that page, states that there's no opportunity for judicial review of this determination. So it's an expedited removal administratively. He can't do anything about it. He can't reopen anything, and there is no judicial review. But on the next page, on the back of that document, the box is marked that he is excluded for a period of 20 years. The only reason that box would be marked is that immigration officials are relying on the fact that he has been deported previously, and so the exclusion period is 20 years. If he was just getting bumped back across the border without reliance on any deportation order, the top box for a period of 5 years would have been marked. So it can't be both ways. But either way,
but
it's not.
The way to correct it would have been to appeal from it, saying, in fact, the basis for appeal does exist because the prior order doesn't affect us. And then it's a new, altogether independent action. But there was no attempt to do anything with it here because you said everything, the check indicated he couldn't do it.
That's right. He couldn't. He wasn't told he could
have any... But if it was an independent one, he could have, in fact, and the way to determine that would have been to attempt the appeal. It says, wait a minute, this is not controlled by earlier one because this is a new action altogether. So I do have a right of appeal.
If it was a formal deportation proceeding, a new one that they were conducting in February of 2002, then he would have had a right to appeal. But what it was a proceeding under 8 U.S.C. 1225 that's an administrative proceeding determining someone's inadmissibility, and it says the alien shall be removed from the United States without further hearing or review unless he indicates he wants asylum for some reason, and that's not the case here. So in the statute, it says, end of story, you don't pass go, you go straight to jail, basically. And so he couldn't have any review of that proceeding. And if it is, alternatively, a reinstatement of the original deportation order, then it's invalid because the original 1996 order of deportation is invalid. Okay. And so that's Government's Exhibit N9. Government's Exhibit 10.
Ms. Austin, I'm afraid you're out of time.
I am, Your Honor. The court.
But you have some time remaining. Let's hear
okay.
from Mr. Schiller, and then
I'm sorry.
You return.
Yes, now it's good afternoon. By 5 minutes. For the record, my name is David Schiller on behalf of the United States. One point that came up, and then I'll proceed to my argument, is the question of whether the defendant was advised of the right to reopen hearings and determinations and the like. If you look to JA 110, which is the show cause order from 1996 that the defendant signed, you will see in unmarked paragraph number 3, you'll see it's a dual English-Spanish document. But unnumbered 3 says, if you are deported in absence, cannot seek to have that order rescinded, except that. And then A, you may file a motion to reopen the hearing, etc. There was specific written notice of that right to reopen to the extent the court is concerned about that. And the defendant and the defendant's adult brother signed that document at that time. And you'll see later in the document that the brother attests that the document was read in Spanish to the defendant by his brother. And I think that sufficiently addresses that question that came up in a number of aspects. Your Honors, with regard to this matter, I think the defendant has two huge burdens hurdles to get over that he has not in this case. One is the factual findings, and second is the matters of law and procedure that apply in these circumstances, even if there was a failure of notice. With regard to the factual findings, the defendant in the brief does not address this, but the standard of review is, of course, clear error. And this court's decision in Brown and Breeze, and then the Second Circuit's decision in Cerna, make it very clear how substantial a burden that is. Now, in this case, you have two notices of deportation that are separate and apart. One is, of course, the 1996 proceeding. And in that case, the defendant is arrested at a worksite enforcement operation up there in Detroit. They find that he is a juvenile. He's turned over to his adult brother. He was released that day. The notices are given as to that there would be a deportation hearing. And when I say a notice, if you look to the 1996 notice, which starts at page 107 of the appendix through 115, it's denominated Notice of Show Cause and Notice of Hearing. And then it says in that document, the specific date and time of that notice or of that hearing will be sent by certified mail to the address that he gave him. And the defendant and the defendant's brother both signed that, understanding that they knew that that was the importance of that notice as to his hearing. I would note that the defendant in the brief references only part of 1252B, A2A, you know, talking about the notice, because it says written notice shall be given in the order to show cause, which I contend was. But the part that's left out in the brief is the phrase "or otherwise." And in this case, you have a notice of hearing given in person to the alien and his adult brother, for which they sign, that expressly says the date and time will be given by certified mail down the line. And that, I think, certainly is encompassed by the or otherwise language of the statute. I want to point out one more point about the statute, and that is it was repealed in September of 1996. The repeal did not become effective until March 97. So to the extent the court is concerned about this particular statute, it is not something that you're ever going to see again. It's done and over with. Now, as to the factual findings, counsel does not address them, but Judge Gibney went through in particularly detailed order after about a four-hour hearing he had in his court, making specific findings on the record. The court found very clearly that the notice was mailed, that two attempts were made to deliver. It's not that a card to say, come pick up, was left there. The envelope, which is part of the exhibit, says two attempts at actual delivery were attempted by the post office. Then they left a card saying, come pick it up. And then it was not picked up within the time. And then it was sent back to the immigration court. It was not, by the way, the Office of Enforcement that handles this notice. It's the immigration court itself. And they did that attempt. Now, the defense argues, well, they should have gone out and hunted down this defendant, found him, and served him in classic process server role. And I would submit that that's not a practical option in this case, given the number of aliens that we have in this country at any given time and the burdens that they're under. And I think what was done here was more than sufficient, especially if you look at the release order where it requires the alien to come back every month and report into the immigration office. And he could have gotten his notice or asked more about when the hearing was. And there's no evidence that he did
that. You're saying
he
didn't do that? He didn't come back every month?
It was not established in the record, Your Honor, because it was 96 records. But my point is the alien had full opportunity to do that. And when we get to the legal point, one of the things that the defendant must show is that this was palpably unfair in the procedure that was followed. And had the defendant truly wanted to go through and establish some right to stay and the like, he knew where to go, he knew who to contact, he signed that he would agree to do that in any event, along with maintaining his address, along with maintaining his residence, and that he did not do that. Judge Gibney then concluded it was unreasonable to say that a defendant cannot pick up certified mail, cannot do or exercise the opportunities that he has to get further information and the like, and then come in and complain down the line, especially then also, as we'll get to in a minute, the exhaustion of administrative remedies that never occurred. And on the totality, the Judge Gibney said with regard to the 96 deportation order and the subsequent application of that, there was nothing palpably unfair to this defendant with regard to this. Now, of course, the 2002 order comes in, and that occurs, remember the facts here, is that after he's ordered deported in 96, nothing happens to this defendant. And that is not unusual given the numbers that you have here. And what happened was the defendant raised himself up to attention by committing driving while under the influence. In a serious case it was. And then notice goes to immigration and they went and picked him up at his probation office. And that led to his deportation back to Mexico. He then turned around and came back relatively soon thereafter. And he was trying to sneak in to the United States in the back of a car, as the record shows, and I've given ample cites to the record as to that. He was intercepted at the border, and an expedited process was engaged at that point. And if you look at the specific order of removal at that point, it says very expressly what the grounds were. And that's on JA 129, and it gives four specific grounds up here. And that's what was stated, and that was what was signed by the regional officer who's responsible for making these administrative findings. And there is no notice whatsoever, there's no reference whatsoever in those grounds for exclusion at that point as to anything dealing with Detroit in 1996 and that deportation hearing way back then. It was clearly, they caught him sneaking into the border in the classic fashion, and they tossed him back across the border for the good and administrative reasons. And nothing in 7AI, capital I, has anything to do with the prior deportation order. Now, Ms. Austin is correct that the 20-year exclusion period was checked on page 2 of that, and that's obviously an administrative error given the grounds for removal set out and certified by the enforcement officer, but I don't think that is sufficient to track this back to the 96 deportation order in any fashion. The grounds are set out there, and more importantly, the judge found as a factual matter expressly that the grounds in the 2002 February 13 exclusion order had nothing to do with the 1996 deportation order. And again, that's facts that cannot be dispensed with by the defendant, despite their desire that, in fact, they would like to. And obviously, Ms. Austin is quite candid with the court. They have to win both challenges to both orders to prevail on this motion. If they don't, if either of them is sufficient, then that's predicate grounds for the charge that's ultimately made last year in this case.
When Which of the boxes on the page on J130 would have been the correct box to check?
Correct box, in my opinion, would be the top box, the five-year exclusion. That's an administrative exclusion period. Actually, all those boxes are wrong as a matter of law because you still have to apply for permission from the Attorney General or the, well, now it's the designee Secretary of DHS. So the administrative exclusion period that references to is really, candor and irrelevancy, because if there's not an application for entry following removal or deportation, you don't get in regardless of how long ago it was.
They couldn't come in the trunk of that car.
They certainly can't do that. He has to come through an inspection. I mean, there are 16 different violations. I say that in hyperbole, multiple violations. You know, if you want to try and come in to the country, you come in, you present yourself for inspection at the control point, the gate, give your name and identifiers, they run it through the system, and you go from there. This is obviously a surreptitious entry or an attempted entry, and that you don't get to do. And that's where I'd like to move with regard to the law. And that is that in this case, even if both orders were bad, which factually I don't think you can get to given the standard view of the district court's findings, the legal burden is not met because there are three mandatory requirements in this collateral attack. In the statute, 1326D, one, you exhausted your administrative remedies, two, you were deprived of any judicial review, and three, the order itself was fundamentally unfair. I'm sorry, I said palpably before. Fundamentally unfair. And the question is, has this defendant shown that there was that any of these three standards was met? And then finally, they have to show an effect of prejudice, which is, what did you lose? And in this case, the defendant is arguing that, well, we might have had a right of voluntary removal or voluntarily leaving back in 96, and there was no evidence that the defendant had the wherewithal, the means to actually do that, even if he'd been accorded that right. But he would not have been accorded that right, as we argue in the brief. In any event, so you get to this first requirement, and that is as to burden number one, exhaustion of administrative remedies. And in this case, the defendant never moved to reopen the immigration hearing. This court has ruled in Kerfees and in Nabegwire, which is cited in the briefs and some other sites, that that's a requirement to reopen. And he didn't do that. And as I say, there was written notice signed by the defendant of his right to reopen that hearing, and it never occurred.
Could he have attempted to do that even after he'd been arrested on this particular offense?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. That happens all the time. Yes, is the short answer.
In other words, if he were alleging that he had been deported in absentia, that he had no notice, even though the typical 90-day appellate period had expired, if he had made those allegations, he could get back into court to challenge the deportation.
My experience is you can get into BIA a whole lot of ways to review whatever happened before, and then whatever your circumstances are now as to whatever rights you think you have to stay here. I don't think the defendant was circumscribed in his right to get either review through the immigration system or petitioning the courts themselves. And I don't want to make the arguments for the defendant, obviously, but yes, it is there and it's done all the time. It's been my experience. But I do cite they could have petitioned for reentry to seek judicial review. After you're tossed, Ms. Austin is saying, well, if you're done on an expedited review, you can't do anything about it, and that's simply wrong. Under 8 CFR 212.2, you can petition for reentry to come in and do that review after you're back in Mexico or back in your home country otherwise. And then the third administrative option is you can sue from Mexico. And I cite two cases actually from the Ninth Circuit. They have much more experience in seeing that all the time, but that's available as well. But the bottom line is, in this case, you cannot choose illegal reentry in lieu of trying to administratively exhaust your remedies that are there. And that's what this defendant chose to do in 2002. And he just wasn't good at it and got caught at the border. So you have exhaustion of remedies requirement. He had three different remedies that were available. The defendant did nothing except try to illegally come back into this country. And the final point I'd make with regard to this before moving on is that if you look at the defendant's behavior each time he gets caught the next time, he waives any right to review. If you look at the boxes where that are referencing back to the 96 deportation hearing, which is all the other attempts at illegal entry, except for this one, February 13th, 2002, he checks, no, I don't want further review. I want to be sent back. And so Ms. Austin is not correct in saying that he wanted to exhaust his remedies in any respect. He declared multiple times that he was not interested in that. I think he's held to that. With regard to burden number two, he has to show fundamental unfairness. The district court found there was no fundamental unfairness here. In fact, the district court found that it would be unfair and unreasonable to allow the defendant to not have picked up his notice or done anything else and then take advantage of it down the line. The burden is obviously on the defendant here, and that is not shown. There's no liberty interest in the discretionary relief, which is cited by the defendant as the one right, which is this option for voluntary removal. And that this court held that in Wilson in 2003. So there's nothing fundamentally unfair here about them using that certified mail, especially where they told the defendant in a document that he signed that that's how he was going to get his date and time notice. And so that burden cannot be met here. The third is the defendant has to show some kind of prejudice. There's no evidence shown that he had the right to get voluntary removal or he had the means to do it. And independent of that, and I think Judge Traxler made the comment at one point, after he is removed from the country, he's not allowed to come back. It's not like he got bad notice in 96, he was deported improperly, if you accept the defendant's argument. That doesn't give him a right to come back anytime he wants without compliance with the law. And yet that's essentially what the defendant is arguing here. I would point out as well that there is absolutely no attempt in the defendant's briefs anywhere to show that these three legal requirements apply in any respect to the February 13th, 2002 expedited removal order. There's not any argument that it was unfair, that it did not apply, that there was some right he had that was denied, or that he couldn't reopen it down the line. There's just no attempt to make the legal burden at all with regard to the second one that I'm citing here. And it's basically the defendant with regard to the 2002 points out in the rebuttal brief, I was interested in this phraseology, says that, well, the 2002 order that I'm referencing was, quote, not styled as a reinstatement of the earlier order, but maybe because of this exclusion zone thing, it was, quote, a de facto reinstatement of the earlier order. And that's about four stretches past anything reasonable, I think, in interpreting what happened here. So we have a circumstance where you have multiple orders removing this defendant from the United States. procedures were followed to the extent the court, the district court found that they were appropriate, but in any event, the legal requirements for proceeding in a collateral challenge were not met or even close to being met, and so I would recommend strongly the court affirmance of Judge Gibney.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schiller. Ms. Austin.
Thank you, Your Honors. What the government has not addressed with regard to the orders, the February orders, the subsequent orders of removal, is that if they are, as the government contends, not reinstatements of the original deportation order, then they have to be read for what they say they are. And on JA 129, it says, pursuant to a section of the Immigration and Nationality Act, in parentheses, 8 U.S.C. section 1225B1. Now, what that section reads, 1225B1A1, is that an immigration officer determines that an alien is inadmissible, and if the officer orders the alien removed, it is without further hearing or review, unless the alien wants to submit for admissibility under asylum. So it is a hearing which offers no opportunity to be heard and no meaningful review. And under Mendoza-Lopez, that removal cannot be an element for the felony prosecution of illegal reentry. It has to be a hearing at which the alien is given a fair opportunity to be heard and opportunity for judicial review. And with regard to the elements that the government contends Mr. Acosta Flores does not meet, we submit that he does, in fact, meet all three of the elements. The first two elements he meets by a strict reading of this court's decision in El Shami. When there is no notice of the hearing, and the hearing is held in absentia, then it has to be that you have no opportunity to be heard. You have no judicial review because you're not informed of the opportunity for judicial review. And a reading of El Shami nowhere requires that Mr. Acosta Flores reopen his deportation proceeding of 1996 before he contests collaterally under a prosecution for illegal reentry. That is not a requirement. And Could he have at some point?
The earlier contention was he never got notice of it. And then, of course, it was pointed out on page 110 that he did get notice that he could reopen it.
Well, that notice is prior to the hearing. That notice is, we're going to have a hearing sometime in the future. And it doesn't say it's going to be sent by certified mail to him. That's an incorrect reading of the joint appendix. It states that it will be sent by mail. Notice, it will be calendared and notice provided by the office of the immigration judge. Notice will be mailed to the address provided by the respondent. Well, it wasn't just mailed to the address. If it was just mailed and delivered and not returned, unable to deliver to addressee, then that would be one thing. There are cases where it was just sent through regular mail, the notice, and because it never came back, the assumption and presumption is notice was received. And in this case, the evidence is the notice was never received by this juvenile who submitted documents to immigration. It was 5 years later, asking for permission to stay in this country as a skilled laborer. And there is case law out there that when the alien reaches out to immigration later and says, may I submit and apply for a work permit? Here is where I work. Here is the name of my employer. And that is in the record. That's just Defendant's Exhibit 1. He is saying, here I am. Now, if he knew that there had been a deportation proceeding against him and he was ordered deported, he would not be reaching out to immigration and saying, here I am. He did not know he had been ordered deported until 7 years later. He was not arrested on a DUI, as the government says. He was arrested for public intoxication. He was put on 6 months probation. He reported to his probation officer. They arrested him one day. The next day, he was walking across the Mexican border. So Again, no opportunity to be heard, no judicial review, and any reinstatement of that 96 order cannot meet the requirements for a prosecution in this case. And with regard to fundamental unfairness, the case law states that if you don't have notice and you haven't had judicial review, it is fundamentally unfair. Was there a reasonable likelihood that Mr. Acosta Flores would not have been deported? Yes, and it's only a reasonable likelihood that he has to show. And he was in a prime position to ask immigration for voluntary departure rather than an order of deportation. He had a brother who was a lawful permanent resident here. He had not committed a crime. He was simply here as a 14-year-old working. It would have been a perfect opportunity for immigration to say, you get yourself out of the country within a certain amount of time. I'm afraid my time is up. Can I finish with my thought?
Yes.
And so there is a reasonable likelihood that he would not have been deported. I would beg to differ with the government as to the standard of review in United States versus Wilson. This court stated that the question of the district court's denial of a motion to dismiss based on collateral attack of the underlying deportation in this exact sort of case is reviewed de novo. That's United States versus Wilson. So we would ask the court to reverse and enter an order directing the district court to dismiss the indictment in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Austin. I'll ask the clerk to adjourn court, and then we'll come down and greet counsel.
This honorable court stands adjourned until this afternoon at 3 o'clock. I say the United States is honorable court.